So we said at the beginning, we are a speaker meeting tonight, and it does fall on me to introduce our speaker. I scarcely know where to begin, actually. This individual has become an incredibly important part of my recovery. And oddly enough, the story goes that we'd both decided to ask each other to sponsor each other pretty much at the same time. And I'd offered to go and see him in where he lives and buy him lunch and have that conversation. And he phoned me up the day I was just the day, the evening before I was about to leave to go and do that. He just sponsored me. So I said, well, we'll have that conversation. Maybe we need to have that conversation. And we've been having that conversation ever since. And that's a number of years now. He's become an incredibly important part of my journey. I'm pleased to say that we've actually become friends, which is not always the case in a sponsor-sponsored relationship, but it is with ours. And I just love him to bits. And he's just celebrated a major milestone in his recovery. I'm going to leave him to share that with you as he shares his experience, strength, and hope with us, which is his journey to, into, and through Narcotics Anonymous. So, Michael, the floor is yours. Please jump in and share with us. Thank you.
Thank you for that eloquent introduction. I'm a grateful addict in recovery. My name is Michael.
Oh, Michael.
Hello, Michael. Hi.
Hello, everyone. It started off with six people, now they're 19, and now I'm But welcome, one and all. And if you're new to Narcotics Anonymous, welcome here. And if you're not new, if you're just coming back, welcome home. Come to think of it, welcome home to everyone. I did celebrate a significant milestone. For me, it's real significant. It's one of those, I just celebrated 37 years, which was, it's still, when I celebrated 36, it was like, oh, it was kind of, I kind of didn't, I kind of expected it and whatnot. But for some weird reason, that just sounds like, wow. The other day I went to a meeting, and a face-to-face meeting here in Edinburgh where I live, for those who don't know, and there's a kind of a long story and I'll get to it maybe. Where I went to this meeting, there was this person who was sharing, and we did all the birthday things and whatnot. And this person said something that really was interesting. There was a guy who was celebrating 8 years clean, to give it context. And it's somebody I've seen since he's been clean. And I remember when he first came in, and now he has 8 years. It didn't seem like that long ago, but it was. It still blows me away when somebody you've known from day one is got clean. And she said something that really surprised me and gave me food for thought, and that was, I could imagine getting 8 years clean, but I could not imagine getting 37. And I was thinking to myself when she shared that, it was like, the funniest thing is, I can't believe that. And it just didn't seem real. And when I look back upon it, is it boils down to, yeah, it is real. I didn't even. I woke up that morning feeling like, that's a long freaking time to be alive, to be clean. The other day, and I noticed my one of my one of the people I do service with is who's not here tonight. Sorry about that. I have an alarm for 6:15, so therefore. She's not here tonight, but nevertheless, we were doing on the Mondays we do this meeting on here in Higna called Let's Get Better Together, and it was kind of coined by somebody who's never been back to this meeting, that meeting. But I love the title because it makes it more all-inclusive. And we were reading a passage from the Living Clean book, and it was, and I, because it was, I thought I'm going to pick it out because I didn't, because I was going to ask somebody, but I couldn't get in touch with them. And I picked out this a title, I picked up a chapter and then I picked out the number of a page from that chapter, and then we were going to read on it. And the chapter was Spirituality in Action. And one of the things that kind of stood out to me when I first read it, I read this particular one because I go to this a Living Clean book study that happens also here in Higna on Friday nights. And if I'm giving too many plugs to Higna, believe it or not, Higna has been a saving grace for my recovery since I moved here to Edinburgh. And one of the things that this particular chapter said, and I really, it just so hit me. And that was, there are moments when life opens up before us, so many options it seems strangely empty. And I believe that's my whole, that's been my truly been the last maybe few years I've been clean. To give you context of me being an addict, I always do this Reader's Digest version, where I took drugs and I went crazy, and that's how and came to Narcotics Anonymous, and that's my story. But to give you context, I grew up in Sacramento, California. I was born in 1962. Not that that matters, but it may matter to somebody. And I grew up with a family who moved from the South to California. And for some weird reason, they came here thinking it was the land of milk and honey for them. And years down the road, I realized that the main reason why they moved there is they were looking for that peace, that quiet, that sense of they could do stuff. And one of the things I heard from a great storyteller that told the story about Brown versus the Board of Education, my mother was a teacher, and she was one of those teachers who basically lost her job in the South because she was basically teaching an all black school. And she lost her job because of Brown for the Board of versus the Board of Education. There's a long story behind that. And my uncle happened to be living in Sacramento at the time, and they moved their three kids at the time, and I came along and was born and in Sacramento, California. And I realized something that really set the tone of my life, and that was they may have met, and there was a lot of stuff that went on in the South. So the bottom line was, one of the things that they took with them when they left the South was their anger and their fear and their trepidation and all that other stuff. And just because they left the place in which the genesis of that happened didn't mean that it left them. And they transferred it into just California and on his kids. And my parents, I'm just giving you the rough shot of my life. In 1972, I believe is when it happened, my two older brothers died in a fishing accident. And that left a hole in my home that never quite ever got quelled. And so it was like walking in a house full of ghosts and walking in a house full of fear and trepidation, and you just never knew what was going to happen next. And we all, and all the kids kind of acted out in their own little way. I acted out in my lonely, and I realized when I took a really good hard look at my life, I was really lonely almost in my life. I was alone most of my life. I shouldn't say I was lonely. I didn't really go out of my way to make friends. I didn't know how to do that. I mean, and my difficulty was when it, and until I got to Narcotics Anonymous, I did not know how to be a friend to somebody. And the interesting thing was, I knew how to be alone very well. I did not know how to be around other people. I figured out I was an introvert with a kind of, and I like being in my imagination. Another one of my parts of my addiction. I knew I was an addict when I started hiding another thing I was addicted to was Coca-Cola, and I used to hide it around the house so my brothers and sisters didn't get into my Coca-Cola. When I was 15, I did my first drug. I also discovered that my sexuality at that time. And I went on that for many a moons. I don't know how many times I ran away from home. I wanted to have my own identity. I had no idea what that meant. And as it were, I pretty much hung out with the people that did the drugs and did, you know, with that kind of lifestyle that I wanted to be a part of. There was lots of drugs and there was lots of sex and a lot of other things going on at that time. And I knew that I didn't really fit in there. And this is the other thing I realized. I just didn't fit in the crowds that I hung out with. I really didn't. Until when I got out of high school. And I actually ran into these people who were kind of weird and freaky and to other people's, but they were so interesting. They had lives that I really wanted to live. They were punk rockers. There were mods, you know, interested in ska music. They were interested in music. They were interested, and there were artists, and there were these people that I just wanted to be around. And it was the first time I ever had this kind of weird sense of acceptance, because I was an outcast, and I was surrounded by a bunch of other outcasts. And one of the things that with outcasts, they do things together that made them more outcast. And luckily, my drug of choice kind of came along with it. I decided at that time, it was like, if I had a DOC, it would be speed. But I took a lot of things along the way. Maybe not as much as some, but and probably more than others. But, you know, it's not... I heard this said at a meeting a long time ago. It's not the quantity, it's the quality of your addiction. And one of the things I used to do was I followed wherever the party went. And many times I didn't really enjoy let me just put it this way. It's that old 60s statement. If you remember the 60s, you weren't there. And that's basically how the 80s was for me. If I was in the 80s and I wasn't there. And, there were so many opportunities that I kind of threw away. There was a nightclub that used to have punk rock shows and ska shows, and I wanted to see the specials and selector. And I waited like 20, 30 years to see the selector and the specials. And they were still around at the time. And but at that time, I wanted to see them, and I couldn't see them. I just didn't see them because I was too off my face to do anything about it. I can't tell you how many times my mother threw me out of the house, and I always came back with my tail between my legs because I couldn't find a job. I couldn't keep a job at that time. And when I finally left in 1988, in February 1988, and got my first place, I thought, I don't know what I was thinking at that time, but I do remember the feeling of somewhat having to, not necessarily independence, but first time I had to be responsible for myself. And the irony to that was I had not a freaking clue how to do that. And I was strung, you know, and I was getting high and I was getting loaded at that time. And I remember on June 4th of 1988, I was kind of rushing this story because I don't want to spend a great deal of time talking about it. But June 4th of 1988, I wound up getting a job at a department store. And I got the worst bitch out from that manager, who really didn't really, she just wanted to take shit out on somebody, and she saw I was very vulnerable. And I came to this cafe and I was like really wanting to get loaded. I didn't know at the time that when I was using at the time when I was with those people, I didn't go out of my way to get loaded. The drugs just happened to be there, right? And people were willing and sharing drugs. And that's how I got loaded. I didn't necessarily go out of my way to buy drugs because I had no money to buy drugs. But when I did have money to buy drugs, it went to drugs. But that was that moment when I realized I wanted to get loaded. And there was a friend of mine who I knew from my party days, and he was looking sh clean, and he was looking handsome, and he was looking real dapper. And he asked me how I was doing, and I told him I wasn't having a great day, and I told him what was going on. And he said, "You know, I can't help you, but I know a place that could." And June 4th, 1988, I went to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And at the time, I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know what Narcotics Anonymous was. I knew about the other 12-step program, and the thing that made that a moment special and to this very day very special was the fact that when I went to that meeting, I realized that people were happy, they were laughing, they were having camaraderie, which I had no idea how to do that straight, in more ways than one. But also, I didn't really know how to, engage. I knew how to engage myself when I was loaded, but I really did not know how to engage myself when I was straight. I just couldn't do it. And people just welcomed me. And that was the first glimpse of unconditional acceptance I had. The other thing, the truth, like I said, there was a couple of things I remember from that meeting. And that was the Sperry Top-Siders, the Nike Cortezes, and the Stan Smiths. And that was basically all I saw. I saw the footwear, but I never saw the faces. And the only face I really saw, and I still to this very day cannot remember who she was and what her name was or what she looked like. But I remember this really punked out girl with multicolored hair was talking about having 9 months clean. And for some weird reason, I didn't connect the fact that she was clean through Narcotics Anonymous, and she was doing stuff. And it was like that line that was like so many options and so strangely empty. And I had no idea how to relate to that. And I was looking forward to, I didn't know what I was looking forward to. I just didn't have, I didn't have that bandwidth at that time. Come think of it, the word bandwidth really just, it's a fairly new kind of vocabulary for me. But at that time, I didn't know how to really engage with other people. I went to a party and it was just a bunch of people I knew from the fellowship, and I got stoned at it. And that was the 18th of June of 1988. And the next day, I went to I came, and that's my clean day. And I don't, and don't, and I say sometimes that I didn't relapse because you have to have a program to relapse. I just used again. That's basically how I look at that. And at the time, Narcotics Anonymous was a relatively small fellowship in Sacramento. There was only 27 meetings, and most of them were north of me, and I didn't know where any place was. So, but someone told me there was a meeting around the corner. And I went to it, and I became kind of there. It was AA meeting hall, and I spent my first 18 months of recovery in AA. And I remember meeting and there were loads of people in there who were pretty much addicts. One of the reasons I went to this particular meeting hall was people talked about drugs and alcohol as freely as they possibly could, but it was not. But it was always alcohol first, and the drugs kind of came afterwards. But one of the people I hung out with was this girl by the name of Joyce, who was, well, she was a biker chick. And she looked like, and she was the epitome of The cool chick. She was an 80s rocker chick. And she took a shine to me. And I took a shine to her, but not that kind of shine. And we supported each other for our first 4 or 5 years in Narcotics Anonymous. And she was the one that introduced me back into Narcotics Anonymous. And I started to, and I did it through certain, through the means of doing service. She got me to become the merchandise chair for the American River Area's Unity Day. And I asked her, what the fuck is a merchandise chair do? And she said, don't worry about it, we'll work on it. And so I basically became a merchandise chair by name only, but I became the merchandise chair for the Sacramento, for the American River Area Unity Day of Narcotics Anonymous. And having been going to, at that time, I had no idea where all the NA meetings, and luckily there were a few places in where I lived in downtown Sacramento that started meetings. And basically went to them all and started a couple while I was there, at least helped start a couple while I was there. But I remember going, trying to find an NA meeting. There's just one that was opened up right around the corner where I lived, and I was like, and I really felt that sense of belonging in my first meeting. And luckily for me, there was a opportunity for me to show up. And every Tuesday at 12 noon, I was there. I didn't miss, didn't I do not believe I missed that meeting for the first 5 years it was there. And they were asked to, and we moved the meeting someplace else. And now the meeting, now that particular group of people have 7 days a week. But at the time, like I said, there wasn't a lot of Narcotics Anonymous meetings, and almost everybody that showed up to those meetings were the same people that showed up in almost every meeting. I mean, you just couldn't, there was very really, there was very little variety of people because there was, because of the smallness of the group. But I saw the desperation, and I knew what that felt like. And I heard people with their drug of choice, and most of the people who came to meetings at the time, just for context, there was either people who were heroin addicts, or they were crack addicts. They were, you know, I thought that was the bit. I had to either do one or the other to qualify to be here. And someone just told me the only qualification for membership is the desire to stop using drugs, using. And I was trying to disqualify myself to being a member of Narcotics Anonymous for many years because I thought I just didn't belong because I didn't chew heroin over here and I didn't smoke crack with these people and I didn't do that. Well, crack came around when I first got clean, but nevertheless, I didn't do some of the stuff people had done. But the point was, I didn't have to. For the first time, my experience had value. My experience and everyone's experience may differ from person to person, but one thing remained clear: nobody got to Narcotics Anonymous because they had a headache. Nobody got to Narcotics Anonymous because they were having a winning streak. They got, most of us got here because shit kept happening. We wanted it to stop, basically what it boiled down to. And by the way, I subsequently found I didn't find any real NA sponsors until I met this guy named Mark, who was a kind of rednecky guy, kind of short, kind of soft spoken, and he wasn't taking shit from anybody. And his wife, who I used to go to meetings with all the time, she was like, let's go to a meeting. And we just, and anytime we wanted to go to meetings, we just went to a meeting wherever it could be. And he became my first NA sponsor. And I swear to God, he taught me more about service and recovery than any one person. And I still have a lot more to learn. I spent my first 5 and a half years of Narcotics Anonymous in Sacramento. I was kind of like, oh no, here he is at a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, at an area service meeting. I was kind of a tour. Me and Vicky were both kind of notorious about policies and whatnot, because that was what we did. I kind of think of it, it was the thing that kind of made me feel like it was important. After a while I realized that my program was more service-based recovery than recovery-based service. I had an opportunity to move to San Francisco in 1994, and that's when I did. And at that time, it was like San Francisco was in complete and utter mourning all the time. Everybody was wearing black. Everybody, you know, when I first landed there and started going to meetings, it was a really cold time. And there was a lot of LGBT meetings, and I thought I could fit in, and all I did was get distracted. But when I went to just regular Narcotics Anonymous meeting, I felt really at home. I felt like that. I heard the message of hope, and things kind of came along. But my God, was it tough finding a sponsor that I could deal with. And, you know, I worked the steps when I was living in Sacramento, but, I knew my powerlessness and losing my unmanageability. I understand what and it took me years down the road to understand what my unmanageability was. It took me years down the road to understand my powerlessness. It took me years down the road to understand that a power greater than myself. And I won't say that I'm an atheist, but I'm not going to say that I truly believe in God. When I got the basic text of Narcotics Anonymous, I read it cover to cover, and I still have the second basic text I ever owned. And I remember there was a story in the back of the basic text that I really loved, which talked about this man. It was kind of down up from down under, and the last story in the book. And one of the things that it said there, and it solidified every feeling I had about God at that time. And that was, I may even have to pull it out, but it just generally said that even though as my recovery came along, I don't believe in any God of any kind, I believe in the power of Narcotics Anonymous, which I believe to this very day is my higher power. If I had to define what a higher power is, it is the continuing strength of the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. And and he goes on to saying, if I'm well, I can be of service to others. If I'm sick, I can't be of service to anyone, including myself. And what, you know, those words still resonate to me. And the other thing too, that out of the basic text, which is on page 96 in the fifth edition, that talked about we learn to learn know ourselves for the first time, to love to be loved, to know to care for others, and become one with one another. Sometimes in our recovery, we survive things such as death of a loved one, loss of a job, major moves, except these are realities of life for us, and they don't go away just because we came clean. Some of us found ourselves homeless, jobless, and penniless, and we realized that love, that recovery wasn't paying off, and we would go back to our old thinking. But one thing stood clear, and we must not use no matter what. I was going to pull that book out, but I pretty much got the gist. You get the gist of it. And all that happened to me when I was in San Francisco. I moved in with a girlfriend of mine who had a very bad heroin habit. And I had no idea where I was going to go because I couldn't live with her. And I did not know. And people in the fellowship kind of couched me and helped me find a job and helped me get back on my feet. And I moved in with this man who I had a long-term relationship, which lasted 9 years. And it was so bloody scary half the time because I realized that I did not know what from one day to the next, whether I was going to come back to a corpse or somebody who was just completely depressed because he was very suicidal. I don't know if it was something I did or was something he did or what have you. And I'm not going to go. I did, you know, one of the things I did, my first step on that one was I realized that I'm just powerless over how he feels and what do I do? And the simple fact was, you know, you're not responsible for his recovery. You're responsible for your own. And two, you just have to support him as much as the best you could. When I moved out of that relationship, when that relationship broke down and I moved out, I lived with this other guy in Edinburgh, and I lived with him for about 5 years. And in 2006, I met my partner through circumstances which I won't go into here, but let's say that we met in a very strange place and in a very strange moment. And I just thought I was flabbergasted. He was the person that I dreamt of ever meeting in my life. And I chased him all the way to Edinburgh, Scotland. And we dated off and on for 4 years. And we both decided that it was time for one of us to move to a continent. And we didn't know which one was going to move. And he had all this stuff. He had three homes. He had two businesses. He had a career, and I had just a retail job working at Macy's, and that was it. And I made the move, and I have no regrets. I made this move at all, but it was starting all over again in my recovery. I had to get in touch with the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous here in Edinburgh, and it's relatively small too, and it's now building up steam. You know, it took a while for people to realize that I came in with over 20 years clean in Narcotics Anonymous. I was coming on and on, and, you know, coming back and forth to Edinburgh. Somebody sent me love notes. Anyway, and I moved here in 2010, and I've been here ever since. And the thing is, in the last year and a half, and I got to tell you, something broke down. Our relationship broke down and significantly, just like the one in San Francisco. It made me realize that I'm rubbish at relationships, but it's not that. I used to hear people say I have a terrible picker and I'm rubbish at relationships and blah, blah, blah. And I'm not rubbish at relationships. I don't think I am, because one of the things the key elements is, if you want to know what character defects you have, get into a relationship. That's how I look at it. But during that time, I realized I was acting on almost every one of my character defects. But along the way, I met some very fantastic people, such as my sponsor now, Steve, and another person that I met who lives in another country named, I affectionately call him Thor. And all these people, my friend Ray and Thor, and got me motivated to do the stuff that was uncomfortable for me, that I was so afraid to doing. In this fellowship, because the fellowship taught me, the meetings taught me that I can do whatever I wanted to do. I did not have to do this program alone, and I have not done this program alone since I've been clean. And it dawned on me, that's the whole basis of this program is about, it's acceptance. I mean, the first part of my recovery has always been about acceptance. When I walked in, came back into context, that was what I always wanted out of all my life, was finding people who would accept me as me. That's why I jumped from one group of people to the next. That's why I had so many different friends and different people in my life, because I wanted acceptance. But what dawned on me, and someone reminded me, is the person that needed to accept me was me. It didn't occur to me this came in within the last year and a half of my life. And as I said, me and my partner broke down, his relationship broke down, and I had found myself jobless, homeless, and penniless. Well, not really jobless, because I had a job I worked at this one particular job I absolutely hated for 12 years. And why I stayed there is because of fear of change, and fear of what will happen and what will I do. And luckily, I became willing to have an open mind and seek what was out there. And sure enough, a job opened up, and a relationship, and you know, and somewhere along the way, a place for myself opened up. And I got to tell you something, one of the most biggest fears, and this is one of the reasons why I'm kind of getting, I hadn't lived alone for over 30 years. Even when I was living in Sacramento, I always had someone living with me because I needed someone to help pay me the rent. But this is the first time in over 30, maybe 40, almost 40 years that I had the opportunity to be with my own company. And it scared me to fucking death. And I was waiting for the rug to be pulled out from under me because I did not know whether I could handle being alone and whatnot. But miraculously, I came back to meetings and heard the message of hope every single time. One of the things I didn't cover was the fact I kept coming back to meetings. I didn't stop asking questions. How did you do this? Or I basically learned how to listen and learned to listen to people who's experienced stuff in recovery. The other thing, too, that I've also found really necessary, but not necessarily directly to me, was going to another meeting here in Higna called the Illness and Recovery Meeting. And I found myself really drawn to this meeting for some reason. And I think there were a few speakers that were talking about stuff that I didn't survive cancer. I don't have, well, I may have mental illness, but I didn't have severe mental illness. I went through depressions, but I walked through those depressions. I know they were kind of temporary because I've had them before. But I did not know how to navigate all the other stuff. And when I was living in San Francisco, there was a lot of people who were clean, but they were having a really hard time justifying the clean time because they were doing, they had to take AZT, and it was like early doors of AZT was absolutely nasty. Nobody liked it and whatnot. The other thing too is I'm HIV negative. I don't know how I survived that, got through that one, but yeah, there you are there. So listening to the people in their plight about taking medication, and and people who I've met who were told not to take medication because you wouldn't be clean for taking medication, and some of them committed suicide. And that happened way too often. And there's a line in our basic text which talks about medication. Take, you know, listening to your doctors, because, you know, unless we are a doctor and we have a PhD in medicine, none of us have a right to tell anyone how to, you know, navigate through the medications dealing with medication. And trust me, as an older person now, I'm in my 60s, I realize that medication may be necessary to keep me functioning. You know, I take omeprazole because I have very bad gastric problems. And I thought I couldn't tell people that. I mean, what they will think. And, you know, but there are people who have to take medication for mental illness. And I realized that from you know, I'm going to get a little bit political and probably controversial, but I'm just like, if you have to take medication for a physical ailment that's happening to you and you want to stay clean, take the fucking medication, please. Stay alive. You know, and there's so many people who didn't, and they are now, you know, they died because they didn't. They were trying to be martyrs. So that's my political stance on that one. But coming back to that meeting and realizing There are those people who really, truly, absolutely love the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, love being clean, love being alive. And the, and this, and which brings me to the point that I was hoping to make, and I'm not quite sure how I did that, how if I did, how I came across. And that was, I've learned to live in the program Narcotics Anonymous. I learned how to live. I didn't know I was living until I was feeling like I was dying. That sounds, if that makes sense. I did not know how to live in my own truth. I did not know how to live as I am. You know, I'm not all these crazy ass identities. I am just Michael B., and I'm a grateful addict in recovery, among other things I am. I'm not my titles. My sexuality is not a character defect. I am not perfect by any stretch of imagination. And in one of the meetings I went to, there's an old-timer who's kind of this kind of New York Jewish guy, type guy who's atheist, and I love him too dearly. And he loves dogs and cats. And he said something that is one of my most profound statements this week, and that is, progress is perfection. Because we're not here to practice perfection, we're here to practice progress. And to me, as long as I'm on the path, I'm doing okay. As long as I'm doing the next right thing, I'm doing okay. You know, and the only good thing about my history reminds me of what I need to work on. The great thing about my history reminds me why I survived. You know, I've had many, 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 I've had a few decades of being clean and surviving breakups, the loss of parents, the loss of friends, loss of jobs, the getting of jobs, a big move, getting, you know, being married, acquiring a French bulldog, which is still sometimes crazy, but he's, and seeing him grow older, because it makes me feel like I'm growing older, and discovering that how to live in recovery, not just live recovery, and it isn't just doing, you know, and I don't talk do this valley whack about how much service I do, because, you know, since I've gotten clean, just, I mean, one form or another, I've done service. That's what kept me connected to the fellowship. How I learned how to work these programs and find people. And, you know, and I found I may not have a great deal, and I can count on my one hand how many people I'm so close to. I can tell anything to, and nobody judges me for making stupid mistakes. And as a matter of fact, they laugh at me, or they tell me, well, Michael, guess what? Another lesson learned. I don't have to be perfect around here. I just have to just keep on trucking. Somebody asked me how do you get the time that you have? I tell them I work the program to the best of my willingness and ability. I don't pick up, I keep coming back, and I don't die. That's the secret. I just don't die. And today, when I come back, and if I have a dilemma going on in my life, there's somebody who I can talk to about my dilemmas. I get to give back what was freely given to me. I get to hold on to my recovery by giving back. I get to experience a lot of now moments. I get the chance to do the very thing I felt the most uncomfortable about, talk to people. I told you I was completely introverted when I was a child. But the funniest thing, when I said that I moved into this place and I was scared shitless about being with me, it was the reality hit me that I know how to be with me now. I know how to be okay with being with me. I don't have to look like, you know, at one point I thought I had to look like a certain way and act a certain way and be a certain way in order to be, you know, get other people's acceptance. And then it dawned on me, I don't need to do anything I don't want to do. I'm happy where I'm at. I mean, today I'm happy where I'm at. I'm content with where I'm at. I'm not, you know, I wish I had a little bit more money. I wish I had a little bit more this or that and the other thing. And then I'm reminded of a joke, you know, if you think you don't have enough money, Bill Gates doesn't have enough money. Elon Musk doesn't have enough money. Jeff Bezos doesn't seem to have enough money. So you're in good company in that. The other thing I'm great company is I know you guys are survivors, which is why I mentioned that illness and recovery meeting on Thursday nights. I realize I don't have to go, you know, the beauty of being around going to meetings is to the one thing I've learned a long time ago that a lot of my experience, a lot of other people's experience may not happen to me today, but I have context to know how to survive those bumps in the road when they happen, because I know the blueprint because someone in here has experienced that themselves. I'm not doing this alone. I'm not doing this blindly. I know that somebody has gone through what I've gone through. And when I shared that, somebody else may be going through that same bump and they can take on that and they can take my experience. Because that's one of the only things we have, the one currency that Narcotics Anonymous has more than anything else, and that is experience, experience of others. And I went on a little too long on my little rant, but I want to tell you guys that when I discovered this group, Steve asked me to share at this meeting a long time ago. Actually, I don't know how in the heck I found this group first time around, but I was in San Francisco about 2012 or 13, I can't quite remember. And I met him, and he told me about this meeting online, and I thought I'd check it out. I came coming back to the Higna group ever since. This meeting has kept me aloft. It's kept me, it kept me in my darkest days. It's helped me walk through those dark days and not feel so alone. And that's the beauty of a home group. It makes you feel less alone because you're with your brothers and sisters. And I have a whole bunch of brothers and sisters that live all around the world, and that some of which I've never met. Luckily, I've met Steve, and I've met Christine, and I've met, I can't think of anyone else that comes to this meeting that I've met yet, but you know what? But nevertheless, I've met, but because I've been a member of Narcotics Anonymous, I've met so many people from different walks of life that you could tell people from Narcotics Anonymous because they all look a bit odd together. They must be from an NA meeting. The people that just do not look like they should fit together, and they do. And the greatest news is I'm part of a great society of men and women who shared their experience, strength, and hope with me to keep me coming back and in hopes that to carry a message. I'm not sure if I carried one, but the one thing I do know is this fellowship has kept me alive, curious, driven, wanting more. And because of that, I thank NA for what it's given me. Freedom, not just freedom from active addiction, but ongoing recovery through working the steps, doing the service, and possibly making the connections that I do.